is Troy. I'll be reading the scripture for today. It's 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 through 17. Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that, though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as to the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. As God's slaves, show proper respect to everyone, love the family of believers, fear God, honor the emperor. This is the word of the Lord.
When I was about 8 years old, I think, our family moved to Australia and went from one culture to another. Now, United States and Australia, they're not the most like night and day in terms of cultures being opposite, but there were a lot of changes for us to get used to. And many people, even here in this room, know this experience even more than I do, because you may have come from, may have moved at some point in time, or currently even are living in a different culture than the one that you came from, and have experienced what it's like to go through a lot of those changes and transformations. I can just remember some of the changes, though, that took place, and some of the things we had to figure out, even down to little things like accents or what you wore to school, you know, because when I was coming from here, I could wear pretty much whatever I wanted to school. When I went there, we had a school uniform, okay? And this uniform, it was nice. It was real nice. You had a button-up shirt, you had a tie, you had a blazer, and for those of us in elementary school, which I was at the time, you had some really nice short shorts that were about up to here, and long socks to here. Black shoes required. It was ridiculous. But it was pretty good. And then we were broken up into houses, like if you've ever, you know, seen something British, like even in Harry Potter. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that at church, but Harry Potter has the houses. And there they had houses that you were broken up into, and you would compete among the houses. We were in Shaw House, S-H-A-W. Now, here's the problem. Australians, when they say Shaw, they sound like Shaw, you know. And then when they say we want to go to the beach, and that's over by also the Shaw. And so we had no idea what the name of the house was. It took us a few weeks until we saw it written out to figure out, oh, we're not in Shore House, we're in Shaw House. And so just all of the little things that we experience as we move from one culture to another, I think a lot of times our goal in these types of settings, and my goal as an eight-year-old moving into Australian culture was to assimilate, you know, try to figure out everything and then blend in. And it happens when you're young. I mean, you develop an accent. I had an Australian accent, and I'm sad that I lost it, but I did within months of moving back to the United States. Spent years on getting that thing down, and now I can't even impersonate it. But you tend to assimilate to that culture where you're living and where you're staying. And then sometimes, in a lot of circumstances, that's not good or bad. You know, we adopted an Australian rules football team that was our team. Our household actually was divided. We had two of them, the North Melbourne Kangaroos and the Richmond Tigers, Carn the Tigers. I'm a big Tigers fan. Even to this day, I still watch footy on TV occasionally. And it's just a whole different culture, has a whole different set of experiences. And sometimes your goal is to assimilate. But Peter tells us we have a little bit of a different goal when it comes to melding as followers of Jesus into the culture of the whole world and various cultures of the whole world, of how we are supposed to connect and relate within those cultures. We're continuing on once again our series we're calling Set Apart. It's a series through 1 Peter. We use that terminology, set apart, because one of the themes of this letter is holiness. God is holy, and he's calling his people to be holy. And the word for holy is to be set apart, to be unique, to be different, to be set aside for God's purposes. And here's what he says. He's really playing off of that theme here this morning as we jump in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. He says, "Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul." Now, Peter has already called his audience exiles or strangers at the very beginning of the letter. And this time he adds another word to it, foreigners or aliens, sometimes it's translated, to what he's calling them. And here's what he's saying to them: as foreigners and aliens, as strangers and exiles, our goal is not to assimilate. It's not to assimilate. He's making a different case for us, and Peter's emphatically pointing some things out. The first thing he's pointing out is that really this land, wherever we live, this world is not our homeland. It's not our homeland. For those of us who are in relationship with Christ, this is not our homeland. So we are in a bit of a strange position, because regardless of where we are born and raised, regardless of where we may move someday, this isn't our homeland. And so it's a unique aspect of being a Christ follower, is that we're called to not get so caught up in the affairs of this world as to put our hope in them. You know, the people when you assimilate to this world being your homeland, you begin to put your hope in things that belong to this world as your homeland. When you have a homeland from someplace else, your hope is in something altogether different, which is extremely comforting, because there's a lot of times where things are not going so well on this planet. And so we have something to look forward to. And this has been the case in Christian thinking all the way back. There's a writing, they call it either, there's different names that it goes by. One of the names is the Epistle to Diognetus, or in the particular translation that I've been reading, it's called the so-called Letter to Diognetus. It's an anonymous letter. This is dated to be in the early second century, so within 100 years of the life of Christ. And it's a beautiful early apologetic defense of the Christian faith. And the recipient of this letter is named as Diognetus. And so there's some really interesting things that it says. It goes through several questions about the faith, and one of them is the Christian's relationship to the world. And he's clearly leaning on what Peter says in 1 Peter for a lot of the things that he says. It crosses over in amazing ways. I'm going to read a bit of an excerpt, somewhat of a lengthy excerpt out of this, but just find ways that we can connect to this. I think it's always useful when we read from someone who's from a completely different culture, whether that's the Bible or whether that's someone who lived a long time ago trying to apply Scripture to their lives. It's a great tool for us to know what crosses over in all cultures. It might look a little bit different, but we still are fighting the same battles in so many ways. And here's what the author says. Christians cannot be distinguished from the rest of the human race by country or language or customs. They do not live in cities of their own. They do not use a peculiar form of speech. They don't follow an eccentric manner of life. This doctrine of theirs has not been discovered by the ingenuity or deep thought of inquisitive men, nor do they put forward a merely human teaching, as some people do. Yet although they live in Greek and barbarian cities alike, as each man's lot has been cast, and follow the customs of the country in clothing and food and other manners of daily living, at the same time they give proof of the remarkable and admittedly extraordinary constitution of their own commonwealth. They live in their own countries, but only as aliens. They have a share in everything as citizens and endure everything as foreigners. Every foreign land is their fatherland, and yet for them, every fatherland is a foreign land. They marry like everyone else and they beget children, but do not cast out their offspring. They share their board with each other, but not their marriage bed. It is true that they are, quote, in the flesh, but they do not live, quote, according to the flesh. They busy themselves on earth, but their citizenship is in heaven. They obey the established laws, but in their own lives they go far beyond what the laws require. They love all men, and by all men are persecuted. They are unknown, still they are condemned. They are put to death, and yet they are brought to life. They are poor, and yet they make many rich. They are completely destitute, and yet they enjoy complete abundance. They are dishonored, and in their very dishonor are glorified. They are defamed and are vindicated. They are reviled, and yet they bless. When they are affronted, they still pay due respect. When they do good, they are punished as evildoers. Undergoing punishment, they rejoice because they are brought to life. They are treated by the Jews as foreigners and enemies, and are hunted down by Greeks. And all the time, those who hate them find it impossible to justify their enmity. That's the calling that we live. This really, a lot of that is exactly what Peter's saying to us, just in a little bit of a different time and place and somewhat of different words, but really well put, and I think applies so well to our lives even today. This is not our homeland. That beautiful line, to them, every foreign land is a fatherland and every fatherland is a foreign land. We have an ability and a calling to live in a unique way in this world, in this time and place. Peter said once again, in the first part of verse 12, the very next verse that from where we picked up or from where we left off, live such good lives among the pagans. Now, just real quick, I mean, this word pagans, it kind of hits our ears a little bit harshly. That's not a derogatory term. That's just that they would identify as people who are following a faith of paganism, of worshiping various gods. And so Peter's not saying it, putting anybody down. He's just literally identifying the people who his audience is living among. And so he says, live such good lives among the pagans. Now, this is not our homeland, but we're not to become separatists, because he says to live among the people, to live among them and alongside them. And clearly, as you read the whole thrust of the letter, is that people are seeing the lives of his audience, of the Christians who he's writing to share the gospel with, both with their words and with how they're living. And so he's, as he's writing this, he's saying it's among the people, among the pagans who live in this area where you're around. So there's a difference, though, between being, saying this is my homeland and I'm going to live among. So it's kind of like what the author of that letter to Diognetus said. It's like, you know, we are living in this land, but we're in the flesh, but we're not being driven by the flesh. And so there's this sort of different way that we view life. So we live in this place, but we also have to be careful about how we live. So what does it look like when we're making it our homeland? I think the main thing it looks like when we begin to make the world our homeland is we begin to put our hope in the things that people of the world put their hope in, not realizing or forgetting that the only deliverance we have is through Jesus Christ and Him alone. We begin to adopt functional saviors, things that will help us cope or to get by, or things that we think if this happens, then it will go well. I think one really great way of viewing this is this upcoming year. We're in an election year. And there's going to be a lot of opinions. And we're allowed to have our opinions. You know, we live in this land as citizens, right, in a sense, but also as aliens in this land. And so I think one of the things that can happen, though, during these election cycles, and one of the reasons I think why it's become so divisive is people are putting more and more hope in the results of elections. No election can save you. No human election can save you. We have a king in heaven. That's the land that represents that we're representing here on this planet. And that's where we need to be putting our hope for those of us who are Christ followers. And so I think what happens is we then begin, as we put our hope in election cycles or in politicians, and then we start, regardless of which side, by the way, we start to put our hope in that, and then we start to speak like people who have put their hope in that. And when we start to have that kind of conversation and that kind of dialogue with people around us, we are betraying what we say our hope is truly in. And we're showing that our hope is actually what it's supposed to be in anyway. We're betraying what our hope is supposed to be in, and we're showing what our true hope is in. Things that are temporary, things that will not last, and things that will not deliver or save us. And so it's not that we don't have an opinion. It's not that we don't participate in voting and do all of our homework and allow the scriptures to inform the way that we would carry that out. But we cannot enter into the public debate in the same tone, because our hope is not in these things. And by the way, you're in a church where we're never going to tell you specifically how you should vote on a particular item. We trust God's Spirit to convict us and to lead us as we do that. And we live in tricky times. We live in difficult times. And so we just need to be conveying our message of hope in the gospel of Jesus Christ rightly to those around us. We can't hold too tightly to temporal things. That just being one example. But when we assimilate culturally, our lives won't look different overall because of Jesus. They won't look different. But we're called to live like those who are foreigners and aliens in this land. This is not our homeland. I'm going to reread part of verse 12 here as we transition to the second thought that Peter's going to give us. He says, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. This idea, this thought of living such good lives. We live them among the pagans, but we're called to live such good lives. And that word for good can actually be translated also as beautiful. We live such beautiful lives. We're being called to live beautiful lives because beautiful lives makes the gospel attractive. When we live beautiful lives, that will make the gospel attractive to those around us. And so that's what we want to do. We want to show Jesus and his fame and his glory and his beauty through our lives because we're really that representation to most of the world, the only representation some people we interact with may ever receive in this life. So beautiful lives makes the gospel attractive to people around us. We try to focus on this as a church because we just believe it's so central to our calling as Christ followers. When Jesus went and he called people to follow him, especially his closest inner circle, he would come up to them and he would challenge them and he would turn their lives around. In fact, the first time we see him calling disciples, he says, "Come and follow me and I'm going to make you into someone who fishes for people." Or you may have heard the term fishers of men. I'm going to have you be out here fishing for people. Your life is going to be transformed, and it's going to look more like my life. And he's given us a task. So that's the beginning of his ministry. At the end of his ministry, there's this passage called the Great Commission. He says, "I've got all authority on heaven and earth. It's been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit." He calls us to go and to be people who are on a mission. And that really, it's start to finish. It's his ministry and what he was trying to do with his followers in that discipleship process. And so we take that seriously here as a church. We want to become people who are on mission. And sometimes, you know, for all of us, myself included, it can be something that we're working towards and we're in process and we have not arrived. And so we're just working on that. So we're going to be doing something June 1st. I want you to mark this calendar, save the date. We'll be giving out more details next week, but we're calling this a witnessing workshop. And we're going to have three of our own right here who I consider, and they probably won't like me saying this, but I consider to be subject masters because of me being able to observe in their lives them putting these things into action. And they are going to be speaking to us about how to reach particular different types of backgrounds that we might interact with on a regular basis. Because I think the difficulty is we only have one background, each one of us in this room. It might be different for you than it is for me, but we have one background and we only understand our set of circumstances fully, and so we need to make sure that we are having our minds open and understanding how maybe different approaches are required at different times and how we can communicate the gospel and continue to live beautiful lives as we do that. So making the gospel attractive is important, and that comes from how we live. So here are some of the accusations, because he also says that they, even though they may accuse you of doing wrong, that they will see your good deeds. So Christ followers, we have always been accused of doing wrong, sometimes out of just sheer misunderstanding of what people are observing, but then how they're taking that in. So what does it look like? You know, what do some of these misunderstandings look like? Here are some of the accusations in the earlier years of the church. Christians were accused of being cannibals due to a misunderstanding of the practice of communion. That was one way that there were misunderstandings. Because we call one another brother and sister, they accused Christians of being of participating in incest. They were called atheists because they believed in just one God and not the pantheon of gods. And so there was these accusations and misunderstandings that are levied at Christians from day one, and many, many more. Today, there are similar things that happen. But here's what I'll say: this is the only thing that we can do. First of all, we can respond in the way that Peter's going to tell us in a minute. We'll get into that. But the other thing is to self-evaluate. Because I think whenever we're being accused of something as Christians, which is a very broad category right now, and we all understand that, but when we're being accused of something, when people hear, "Oh, you're a Christ follower, or you're a Christian, let me assume all of these things about you," the first and best thing we can do is self-evaluate, right? Self-evaluate. Is any of this sticking? Does that stick to me at all? Is what they're saying even a shade true if it's a negative thing? That's the first and most important thing. How can I own that and move forward in this relationship and in this conversation? Other times, we may ask ourselves those questions and realize, no, this is a misunderstanding akin to the idea of first century Christians being atheists for not believing in all gods, or for being cannibals for participating in the Lord's Supper. We have to categorize, we have to evaluate, but it has to start with a personal evaluation. And I would just say overall, and I'm not talking about this body of believers or any person in particular, but overall, I think that the American church and a large part of the Western church, we've earned some of our critiques from the world around us. And that's the sad reality. Sometimes our lives lately have been not looking so beautiful. To me, the answer to this is just drawing closer to Jesus, looking more like the person of Jesus, reflecting on what he's called us to be. Some of the most common things that we're called in these days is judgmental and hypocritical. And I think there are responses that we could come up with, and sometimes it's accurate. It's saying, because we have to walk this balance. If we are holding firm to God's truth, but he calls us as in our relationship with the world to be non-judgmental. Paul says at one point, I'm not telling you to judge the people of the world in this manner. Separate from people of the world. In that case, you'd have to leave this world. We're called to love people and to respect people, and we're about to see Peter say that, all people in this world. And so we need to find a way to be able to do that. Sometimes it's our behavior in the public sphere that's, again, betraying where our hope is set, that causes these types of behaviors. But this is a big issue for our witness in the world today. Picking up in verse 13, Peter says, "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people." So let me just give the context here. The current emperor is Nero. Nero. And he's saying, we're called to respect and submit to Nero. Now, I think most likely from the research that's done, there's varying scholarly opinions, but most likely this is just before the big government-sponsored outbreak of persecution against Christ followers broke out because of Nero. Maybe his flavor and his tone would have been a little bit different had that been going on actively at the time of this writing, but the principle still stands. Now, again, we are called to obey Jesus as our supreme Lord. And so if our government calls us to do, or any authority, human authority, calls us to do something that we know clearly violates what God would have us do, we cannot do that thing. We cannot do it. Because Peter's the same one who stood before some authorities and said, "You tell me what's right, to obey God or to obey people? I'm going to obey God." He said that very thing to religious leaders, people who are in authority over him. So when it comes to, in order to obey this authority, I have to disobey God, then all bets are off. Like, that changes things. That changes things completely. But at the same time, there's this idea of respect for all that Peter's really getting at. And I assume there's an aspect of this where he's seeing some of them maybe go the wrong direction on this. And he's encouraging them to fall into the right place. And so he's really, culturally, he's calling us to submit to the human authorities. We saw this in that letter to Diognetus, where he was talking about, like, they obey all the laws of the land, but they go even beyond it in their own lives. So we're called to obey the laws that are good and right and that are not causing us to sin. And again, it's a big issue for our witness to be able to live out in that way. So submit yourselves to the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as a supreme authority, governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. But once again, for it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. All right, pop quiz. How should we silence the ignorant talk of foolish people? By doing good. By doing good. Usually, our human instinct is to silence ignorant talk from foolish people in a different way. Is it not? We want to fight back. We want to fight back. We want to engage in an argument. We want to come up with the perfect, pithy statement with a little bit of attitude and mic drop them on Facebook in the comments section. Like, that's how we want to silence ignorant talk of foolish people. He's not saying there is no ignorant talk of foolish people, but he's also saying, don't stoop to that level. Don't stoop to that level. The way that you respond to ignorant talk from foolish people is by doing good. And when we do good, then we silence that argument and that talk in a totally different way. They say kill them with kindness. It's like the same type of concept. It's like we respond in a totally different way. We're not even on the same playing field. We're showing that our hope is not in earthly, temporal things, that we have something else going on, and people will want that because people are desperate for hope that will really stand up. And again, this hope that we have is not like a hope I wish. It's a hope of certainty, something that we know is coming but is not yet fully realized. And so we have that opportunity. So we need to be careful with people about what kind of, how are we demonstrating that faith? How are we demonstrating response to people who may be even trying to goad us into a discussion or an argument? And I'll just tell you, serious conversations, the place for them is never, ever, ever on social media. And yet, I'm telling you, this week I will be tempted to reply to something from somebody somewhere, because that's just how human nature works. It just works that way. We want to get the last word. So we do, again, when he's talking about government, we also live in a different time, in a different government system. And so we do have to relate that to our place. Really, it's the people who run this country. It's like we govern ourselves. We're self-governed. That's the whole point. And so there is room for pushing back. There is room for peaceful protest. There is room for those type of things to have your voice be heard, because that's how this nation was set up. And what Peter is really saying is to operate within, in a godly way, within the confines of that cultural structure. Because types of government, in large part, I mean, the New Testament's not putting forth, this is the correct type of government and this is the incorrect. It's like, how do you honor God in whichever type of government you find yourself in? We find ourselves in a democracy, so it gives us some different options than it may in other times, but we need to remember where our first allegiance is and our homeland really exists. So speaking up about injustices, about issues, those things are okay, but we need to make sure that we're choosing our battles wisely and choosing our medium wisely and choosing our tone wisely. The principle here is timeless, even though it might have different applications in different times and places. He continues on in verse 16. He says, live as free people. I love this juxtaposition. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. So he starts this verse saying, live as free people, and he ends it by saying, live as slaves, God's slaves. So what gives here? I think what he's getting at is true freedom for a human being who is created by God. True freedom is living a life that's where we're slaves of God, where we're in service to God throughout our whole lives. And I think a lot of times we buy into the lie that true freedom is doing whatever I want, whenever I want to do it. That has never, ever gotten anybody anywhere, let alone to a place of thriving. That's never been a good strategy. If we just go off of our basic instinct and what we feel like doing in a moment, we make a mess of everything. Our relationships, we make a mess of our jobs, of our households. We just make a mess of things when we live that way. So we don't want to use our freedom as a cover-up for evil, as justification for evil. We want to use our freedom to honor God, to point towards the one that we were created to serve. So one common area of concern is how we view and treat these freedoms that we have. How can we use our pursuit of our rights even as a cover-up for evil? I think that's been something that we've seen in the church in the West in these last several years, that sometimes we're so dedicated to obtaining and maintaining and protecting our own rights that we forget that Jesus calls us to lay it all down on behalf of other people. So we need to make sure that we're not using our freedom as a cover-up for mistreating others, for getting the last word, for lashing out, but that we're using our freedom to honor God. Verse 17, he says, show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. He's talking about our lives and different areas of our lives and how we're to treat and view other people. That word, he says, show proper respect to everyone, right? Let me just go back into the Greek here. That word for everyone means everyone, okay? It's not complicated. Actually can mean all as well. Like, we're to give proper respect to all, to everyone, all right? Respect everyone. This is the third point that I want to give you this morning. Respect everyone for the sake of the gospel. Everyone, those who deserve it, those who don't. Those who respect us and those who disrespect us. We are to respect everyone for the sake of the gospel. I think one of the best ways that we can get our hearts and minds into a place where we can respect everyone for the sake of the gospel is to remember where we are really apart from Christ. I think for those of us who have been following Christ for a long time, it can be easy to remember that we are also in what our closing song will call a helpless estate. We are separated from Christ. We're a mess. And I think when we walk down a certain path and we look back and we see where we came from, but we forget that's where we came from, it's easy to start like throwing mud at the people who are still back there. And that's just a lack of grace. That's the receiving grace and the not giving grace. But it's a human temptation that I think often we all will have. And so it's just staying in touch with the fact that we are recipients of grace. That's who we are, first and foremost. We are recipients of grace. We're recipients of God's mercy. And if we're going to hold back grace and mercy toward other people, then we're getting it all wrong. We're missing the whole point of what he gave us to begin with. There's a book called Evangelism as Exiles. I know the men's group is going through this book. This is a great book. It's really a book on evangelism. That's almost all of the thoughts are derived from 1 Peter. Because again, 1 Peter, he's talking to people he keeps addressing as strangers and aliens and exiles and foreigners, even though they're probably in their homeland. And there's a sense in which we are to live out this life as a foreigner in our homeland. And so he's calling us to that sort of mindset. And this is also written by a man who was he was in a Muslim nation as a missionary. And so he was in a total foreign land. He was an exile in that land is how it felt. And then he came back to the United States, which is where he was from originally, and he realized that a lot of the principles that were working for overseas missions as truly an exile in that place were starting to make a lot of sense here and now. And so he writes these thoughts for us to share some of his insights and from 1 Peter about how to live and how to conduct ourselves in that type of setting, because our world is changing. There's transformation happening in our world. Some of it we may view as good, some of it as bad, but one thing that's true is it's going to give us an opportunity to share the gospel. Because the gospel will stand out and will look a little bit different when people don't have that understanding. And it's also going to identify, who really is there and who's kind of just going with the flow of culture. I think that the church has thrived in times where it's a cultural minority without power, because it really is not designed to be a faith of power here in that earthly sense. One day Jesus will hold and has all the authority, and he will wield that. But that's not our job. Our job is to lay it down the way he did and to be sacrificial. And so when we make it about something else, it's an issue. And so he just speaks to that. He speaks to this whole idea of being an exile in this world. He says this on page 81. He says, "Our secular world is increasingly suspicious of religion. Christians are no longer part of the solution. We're the problem. Pastors aren't trustworthy. Churches are suspect. Bible believers are bigots. Thus, the days of attractional evangelism are waning. The times on relying on the gravitational pull of our social standing to bring people into a church, a Christian camp, or a revival meeting are all but gone. The time, and it depends on time and place and people's individual experiences, but that's becoming more and more true. He says, the time is coming and is here now when the world won't listen to our gospel simply because they respect us. However, they might listen if we respect them." He carries on a couple of lines later. He says, "How can we call our co-workers to submit to Christ as Lord when they don't see us gladly and respectfully submitting to our boss? How can we tell of God's love for the world when we exhibit disdain and revulsion toward our neighbors? How can we demonstrate a Christ-like compassion for our enemies when all they hear from us is concern for our rights and privileges?" We have a difficult, a challenging, but important call in our world today to represent the mindset of Christ to a watching world who sometimes, unfortunately, is not seeing the mindset of Christ play out in some Christians around. And that may not be all of us, but we need to be careful that it's not ourselves as an individual and not our church as a body of believers. Peter lists a lot of witness killers here in this passage. He talks about unholy living, how that's going to kill our witness, hypocrisy, another way of saying that, a lack of submission to earthly authority, lashing back at foolish people instead of winning them over with good behavior, holding tightly to our own freedom, having a lack of respect for other people. Another way that we can witness to the world is having love for fellow Christians. When we don't have love and unity, that tears apart our witness. He talks about the fear of God, honoring God above all else, and then also even honoring human authorities as far as we can while still holding up God's law. And so we are called to respect everyone for the sake of the gospel. We are called to live beautiful lives that will make the gospel attractive. And we need to remember, in order to do all this, we need to remember that this is not our homeland. So I just want to spend a few moments as we close in a time of reflection and in a time of prayer and just asking God to search our hearts about how we can represent our King and his kingdom in a positive way to those around us. And sometimes we're going to have to take a stand. This is not about not taking a stand. I think we can hear some of these thoughts in different ways, but just doing exactly what Peter says here in his letter, of being people who remember that we are from a foreign land, of really being accused of doing wrong, but not be doing wrong the whole time, that we would be living beautiful lives and to be submitting ourselves to those human authorities whenever possible. So let's spend a few moments in reflection just on our own lives, because again, self-reflection is that great first step. And remembering, again, another key to this, remembering our own helpless estate as we consider how to love and respect other people and show grace and mercy to other people around us. So let's just spend the first few seconds in silence, and then I'll ask a few questions and we'll close with a time of worship. As we're considering, just ask yourself, are there any ways in which I'm living like this is my homeland? Instead of looking to God's kingdom. Are there any areas where the Spirit now is revealing to me that my life is falling short of being a beautiful witness to those around me? And am I treating everyone who I encounter with respect? Not respect they deserve, but with the respect that I'm called to treat them with. Maybe there's someone that you might need to make something right with. Just ask God to convict you in this time. Certainly there are some here this morning as well who Maybe we just need to take hold of that hope that's not temporal and just based on the things of this world. Just wanted to let you know there's space for that too, and we want to walk along with you. We're going to have our prayer team up front in just a few moments, and would love to invite you to talk to anyone you've seen on stage or a prayer team person about what it looks like to take hold of that hope. I'm going to pray. Lord God, we thank you so much, Jesus, for what you did for us, that you came, that you gave your life, that you even submitted to human authority, that you submitted to death on a cross. But you did all of this for us. You set down your power and authority as God on our behalf. And God, thank you that we are the recipients of your grace and your mercy at an immeasurable level. Lord, help us to remember that as we encounter other people who may need your grace and mercy. Help us to live as free people, but to not use our freedom as a cover-up for evil. God, but to live as your slaves, as your servants in this world. Jesus, we worship you, and we just proclaim now that all that I have, all I have is Christ. In Jesus' name.